This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to So Very Wrong About Games, a board gaming podcast about board games. With me is my dear friend and partner, Michael Walker. How are you doing, Walker?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I would just like to address one of the questions that has been coming in lately over the course of the past week. As you may or may not have heard, we have opened up the floodgates for any of your questions. We're going to be doing another omnibus questions episode, which we do every once in a while, intermittently, without warning, like a ninja. And one question that has come in over and over and over again, such that I think that we need to address it now, and that is there a dress code for listening to Swag? And the answer is no. We don't wear pants, but that is largely because our coworker and boss Gibbons find it very disorienting when we wear pants. And so out of sympathy for them and our own personal comfort, we do so. But you are free.
And literally will be free.
Well, there you go. But I think in many contexts, dare I say, they're encouraged to wear pants while listening to So Very Wrong About Games. But, you know, you do you. But please, this does not constitute legal advice. So in the context of any defenses you wish to mount, we are hereby indemnified from any legal consequence you may have from listening to Swag.
Oh, we're going to be in trouble now.
Why is that?
Well, just because that was about 98% of the questions.
So please send in more questions.
No, no, no. There's still... I have not addressed other pants-related issues.
Okay, true, true.
So we've not ruled out all of them. But I am somewhat disappointed that so far there have been zero questions about some of my non-Macross, non-board gaming interests. Zero questions about retro video games. Zero questions about Steven Universe.
Got one right here.
Zero questions about German
really
philosophy.
Can't like Macross.
Probably not. He was a famous stick in the mud. Although that's been exaggerated. The extent to which he paid his way through university by being a card sharp. This is the kind of thing that was expunged from his biography.
Oh.
Anyway. See, that's the kind of question that we could get into on our omnibus questions.
It's true.
So, as I said, this is a board gaming podcast about board games. We're going to talk about board games this week. We're going to talk about the games we played last week. We're going to talk about the news and why it doesn't matter. And then we're going to talk about our feature game, which is an age contrived.
Sure is.
And oh, what a feature it shall be. Walker, what did you play last week?
Mark, I got to play a game called Scrap. This was a review copy from the designer. It is a self-published game. They are going by the name Jolly Swagman Games.
I think that's a good name for a publisher.
I agree. And his name is Kenny Michael Otten. It's very much like Circadian's Chaos Order in the fact that there are many different factions that totally change how the game is played. So many factions, in fact, that they're not even in the rule book. You sort of have to... The rule book just covers the generic rules for the game. There are some minor card clarifications in the back of the book, but the majority of the rules are just... the generic part of the game and the class, the faction differences are all on the cards that you get in your little sort of portfolio that you have off to the side. And it is very much sort of an action planner. You have this deck of cards and you have to plan two turns ahead of time. and even the reset, which I found very interesting part of the game, right? So you sort of, I want to reset. I want to pick up all my cards, sort of Concordia style. And so you have to put that in the queue. So you don't get to do that right away.
Oh, fascinating.
It cycles through the queue. And not only that, you have to like plan what you get to do after
the reset,
right?
Before it's happened. Interesting.
Yeah. So there are many things factionally and with rare tokens that you can do to sort of manipulate that queue, but generally that's how the cycle goes. And so you are trying to control different parts of the map because there is a sort of a harvest action that you do that will let you bring in a bunch of victory points. They have what we called in the... We also stream this, so if you're interested at all, you can watch the stream. There is what I called the sort of the Bunny Kingdom thing where during the game you are taking a lot of these victory point cards. They're anywhere from 1 to 3 points. And then as soon as someone hits 50 points, the game is over. So you can turn over these cards whenever you like. So say if you're close to 50 and you want to end the game, you can, you know, flip up half of the cards.
Oh, wow.
And then hit 50. And then everyone adds all the rest of the cards that they have.
But that's an even bigger issue. Well, issue. I say issue. When you flagged it as being a Bunny Kingdom thing, I knew for a fact. Bunny Kingdom, for those of you unfamiliar, during the first year of the show, Bunny Kingdom was probably the game that we talked about that Walker hated the most. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong.
And jokingly.
Yeah, you played it up. Yeah. It wasn't, you had a fair bit of ire, though. It wasn't purely an act. And as I recall, your primary objection was you didn't like any game where you had no notion of who was doing well over the course of the game because it was all hidden victory points. Everyone just flips them over and suddenly their score is quintupled to what it was before. And largely, I think this is because you were bitter because you lost. But setting that aside, at least in the case of Bunny Kingdom, it wasn't, oh, you're piddling along. Oh, the game's over because I have all these hidden points.
Yeah, but like
so the tempo considerations sound like an additional wrinkle that might
maybe
trigger.
But like
you.
I said, they only go through 1 to 3 points, and so
okay.
You only look over and you can see they have like you know 8 cards. Three point cards are very rare. So normally, you're going to have a 1 or a 2.
Then why did you bring up Bunny Kingdom? I was ready for you to be all angry.
No, just the fact that there's going to be some points added on at the end.
Sure,
and you have no idea how many.
But it sounds proportionally it was far less.
It's true.
Because it was the proportion that really angered you.
Yes, it is way proportionally less.
Okay.
So, all sorts of different robots. It's an AI sort of robot game. You're trying to, you know, progress to the next level of enlightenment with your AI robots.
Enlightenment or consciousness?
Consciousness, maybe. Okay. You're going to the next... Anyway, I had a whole thing in my head about, you know, doing... Finding up old history. Anyway. Let's move on.
Do they do any intriguing dance numbers a la Ex Machina?
No.
That's too bad.
So, lots of different faction powers, lots of interesting things. You have your ship that moves around anywhere on the board that it wants to, and that's where your troops are going to be deployed from. You're trying to get control of areas so you can harvest them. You are fiddling out which cards you want to do. Your cards upgrade. There's a sideboard that you go up every turn and you're moving around and you're doing small actions over there as well. But that's what's going to let you upgrade your cards. Lots of things going on. I definitely want to play it again. You have to get to whoever gets to 50 points will trigger the end of the game. That seemed to take an awful long time. But I think once you get to know the game, and we did play it with a full 4 people that have never played it before.
How long were you playing?
2 hours.
Ooh. And you felt that 2 hours was too long for it?
It seemed longer.
Sure.
But that was me, you know, when you're taking comments and you're making sure everything's moving along and you're...
Oh, is it burdensome to run a game? I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, I know you wouldn't.
No.
Anyway, art is fantastic. It's all nice wooden meeples. Lots of interesting things going on. You're getting weapons. You're getting those special tokens, like I said, that lets you manipulate your queue, which also go on your board, which trigger minor special powers as well. Lots of things to sort of combo off of. Looking forward to playing again. This is Scrap by Jolly Swagman Games.
I have one final question about Scrap. This is an important one.
All right, I'm ready.
Do any of the robots transform?
Not the ones we played with.
0 out of 10, literally unplayable.
Huey was playing a faction that had to mark how much XP they got. My faction handed out corruption, and then I got to spend that corruption to take over their bots and then do stuff with their bots.
That sounds cool.
And then at the end of the turn, they got their bots back. So,
but no transformation.
No transformation, like I said. But there were 2 other factions that we didn't play. Maybe there's some transformation there.
Okay.
Other interesting things, all but one faction that we didn't play with on purpose because I remember hearing something about it. I think it's the fact that their robot numbers are slightly different. But even though they have all these special powers, all their stats are sort of the same. So you can look at the board and you'll know the stats. You'll know their strength and you'll know their star value because the star value of each robot is very important for many things. And so you're not constantly asking people.
Fan base, buzz, publicity.
Yeah. Just so. And then the same thing with, does an area have control? We just made a smart thing where if you have control, you put yourself at the top of that map tile. Mm. That way, and we adjusted it every time. That way you're not constantly counting up and figuring out who has control of what map tile. Anyway, it all worked out great, and that is scrap.
Got to play Root, specifically with the Marauder expansion. I don't have nearly as much experience with the Marauder expansion as I would like. Part of this is because Root, we think, is best with four, and four is not a common configuration we have. And also because a number of people of our acquaintance had a negative first reaction to Root. One of them is Louis, and I dare say that this was a reintroduction of Root to Louis. I don't think he liked it much more this time either. And it's a shame because Root was our game of the year that it came out. Huge fans of Root. Dewey is a massive fan of Root. With great effort, he managed to resist the siren call of the Woodland Alliance. He loves playing the Woodland Alliance. But we played with the advanced setup. The advanced setup for Root has you setting out a semi-random assortment of factions, and people draft them in reverse turn order. And this helps mitigate, very slightly, one of Root's persistent issues for me. Because as much as I love the game, and as much as Root is wonderful, and I don't regret making Game of the Year at all, I think it stood head and shoulders above other games of its year, there is a first player advantage. Because the moment someone hits the necessary victory threshold, the game ends immediately. And that is the way that it is. So being able to draft factions helps alleviate that. It also helps you alleviate the fact that there are now so many factions and some people tend to gravitate towards the same ones. I get to play from one of the factions of the Marauder expansion, specifically Lord of the Hundreds, which is a mob of rats that spreads unrest and more rats mostly. It's rats all the way down. We played the first couple of rounds with a mistaken understanding of the rules. It didn't actually trigger. But we mistakenly thought that the way mobs work from the Lord of the Hundreds, when they detonate, they kill all opposing forces in the clearing, because there are a number of other effects that do that in Root. However, this was an excellent reminder to read things very carefully, and that the law of Root and that the rules as printed on the different faction boards mean exactly what they say, and you have to be very careful about minor terminological differences. Because the mobs do not kill enemy warriors. They only destroy infrastructure. They leave everything else behind. And this was good because a number of people were worried about the overall effect that the mobs were going to have on the board state if they engaged in that level of destruction, and they don't. So fortunately, we were able to figure that out a couple rounds into the game, our game of Root, and props to Dewey, who looked it up because he thought something was fishy, and he was exactly right. And consequently, we then had a much more appreciation for the overall effect that the Marauders have to the board state of Root, and the effect that they have on infrastructure but not warriors, and the way that dovetails with military actions and with building development, specifically the other factions, like the Marquise de Cat and the cult, the Lizard Cult, who were two of the other factions in the game. I enjoy Root a great deal. It was wonderful to get it back to the table. Massive fan. I was able to deploy the lovely little plastic bits that I purchased off Etsy for the upgrades to all factions, including the new ones, and a great time was had by all. So that was Root, specifically the Marauder expansion. The Marauder expansion was designed by Nick Brockman, Patrick Later, Cole Worley, and Joshua Yearsley, an expansion to the base game designed by Cole Worley, published by Later Games.
I feel Louis would enjoy it more if it was played more often. I think he really struggles with sudden abilities that he's unaware of. Like when something does something and he didn't know it could do that, or when everyone's playing different factions and he doesn't understand how they all work. I think it was a game that we played more often and he understood how all of the other different factions work, then maybe he might start enjoying it more.
So that is, I think, the reason that keeps Louis from gravitating towards certain kinds of factions in Root. Like, for example, you know, the way the Marauders work, or the way the Corvid Conspiracy works, or even the way the Woodland Alliance works, absolutely. That is one of the things. Or the Vagabond. The Vagabond's the other structural element of Root. Those are the two things I don't like about Root. The effect that the Vagabond has in the game, I like playing the Vagabond, I don't like the effect that it has in the game, and the first player advantage. The problem is that in this case, there's no purely militaristic faction. And for whatever reason, sometimes Louis is willing to play games where there's no military action, and sometimes he's willing to play games with a combination of military action and infrastructure development. But that particular mix of infrastructure and military en route is not to his taste. So he played the Marquise de Cat in this particular instance, and he just didn't like building buildings. He was like, okay, I guess I make some wood. I'll build a building over here, whatever. I'm like, yeah, that's how you win. You're scoring points. Like, yeah, fine, whatever. He wanted points for going and murdering things. That's what he wanted. So he didn't understand the point or the interest in going in killing a whole bunch of forces so you can rule the clearing and then later on build buildings there. There was actually one exchange where it's like, yeah, if you went and you killed these people, you could build a building there. It's like, yeah, so I get to build another building? Okay. Like, yeah, that's one of the ways you win. He just wasn't feeling it. So he seemed to understand how the other factions worked. There weren't any surprises that he found particularly unpleasant. It was just he wasn't feeling it. It's a shame, but it is what it is. That's Root.
Got to play Cartographers, not on Board Game Arena, not in Alpha, and it is not a very good implementation.
This is all sarcasm. You can just remove the not from all of them. This is Walker speak for it is in Alpha, and he enjoyed it, at least the implementation as far as concerned. You may proceed with the normal review, Walker.
And it's definitely not developed by George Jansen. So Cartographers is a what they call a sort of like a roll and write, or a flip and write in this particular case. There's all these polyomino shapes that you're going to be drawing onto your board, and you can make nice little trees. We're going to put a nice little tree over here. We're going to put a little mountain over here. And a
bunch of happy accidents all over your page.
And there's also bad guys. They're purple, and when a bad guy comes up, you get to grab the person to your right sheet or left. And you get to draw the evil shape on their board wherever you want, totally destroying any hope of them having fun.
Wow.
But anyway, I very much enjoy it. There's all sorts of different scoring conditions that you put up, and it'll tell you how you score points when you place your forests, when you play your homes, when you play your fields. And so you're building up for all these different seasons because it'll tell you which letters will score, you know, A, B, C, or D. Everything about Cartographers I enjoy, not so much in person. It takes just a long time to set up and get everyone on board. That's why I really enjoy it on not BGA. Because you get to, you know, take your time, figure out where the shapes go, and you get to do two in a row, right? You do two because it goes into the next turn, and then it goes back to the other person they get to. And then when playing two player. Anyway, Cartographers. The actual physical board game is designed by Jordy Allen, and it's put out by Thunderworks Games.
What is it about Cartographers that makes you like it more than, say, the Clever Games or other kind? Because to me, I played it a couple times, and it just seemed like yet another roll and write. I didn't see anything to
divert me. The making the little landscape on your sheet is kind of neat, especially when you're drawing the monsters on the other person's sheets. You get to draw little creatures, you know, sort of attacking towards their force. And
sure,
stuff.
But I mean, you just said that in person you liked it less.
True.
I think I caught you in a lie, Walker.
Well, maybe. Well, it takes a long time to set up, but I do very much enjoy it, not on Board Game Arena. Where's my check?
Okay. Played another game of Lacuna, and let me tell you, sometimes there are moments in this hobby, and I'm going to expound on this later in an episode of Bloat, where you're really feeling the burden of these large, sprawling board game experiences, both in terms of time and in terms of physicality, and you really want a palate cleanser, something that's quick, that's to the point, that's tactilely pleasing, and nonetheless has a fair amount of decision-making to be had. And I was having one of those moods over the course of this week, and I looked over and I saw that charming little pillar of Lacuna, and I said, let's just play Lacuna. And so it was glorious. Spread out the lovely little tapestry, shake out the little flowers, pick up all the little flowers that rolled off the tapestry and put them back into position. And I'm not normally one who likes positional abstracts, but Lacuna is simply glorious. I absolutely enjoy the thinking out about in terms of geography, claiming this area of the board, of protecting where I am, making incursions into areas that your opponent thought was theirs, definitely. I've commented before, and I definitely believe this, has the vague sense of some of the physicality and geography of tabletop miniatures games, at least the good ones, where you care about, broadly speaking, dominating areas of the board and worrying about flanks and so forth.
Yeah, it takes all of that. All of those things other people try to do in board games and boils it down to the essence and does it so well.
Yes, I have yet to have a dull moment playing Lacuna. I think I'm getting slightly better at it in that I am now in the position where, when placing the piece, I can understand why no matter what I do, I'm going to lose. This is evolution, right? These are baby steps.
I was about to say, baby steps.
Yeah, precisely. So this is a review copy we got from the publisher. This is signed by Mark Garrett. It's published by the redoubtable CMYK. Lacuna has yet to fail. I should be playing it more often. It should be one of those experiences not entirely unlike Paku Paku or Tapple. You know, you've got 5 to 10 minutes left. So let's just shake out some flowers. Let's just Lacuna this up. Now, granted, we're not as commonly in that position with two players only. And that is Lacuna's, of course, big. It's like a gap in its, how do I say this? It's sort of like a, other players are kind of a, it's a gap. It's a missing thing. Never mind. I'll think of the word later. And I absolutely recommend it. Lacuna is a triumph. Even if you don't like positional abstracts, I think it's worth a try.
Lacuna.
Mark
was nice enough to teach me a game called The Edge Dawnfall.
This is not, I repeat, not a story of how a U2 guitarist was watching the sunset.
It's true. I didn't realize this game was so old. It's ancient, Mark, this game. Why did you show me a game so old?
What are you talking about?
It's from 2018. That's like, what, 30 years ago?
Wow.
This is designed by
Michael Orech, Christoph Piskorski, and Marcin Svirkot.
Put out by Awakened Realms, and it is a great skirmish game that has many different factions to choose from. It has pre-made armies for you, if you wish. You are playing cards. You are moving units around a map. They really focused on the fact they didn't lock you down with like weird movement rules. The game flows around the board, much like David Thompson's For What Remains. Doesn't bog you down with the silly stuff. You just get to do the cool stuff.
Let me tell you a story, Walker.
Oh, I'm ready.
Yeah. This is a story of a young boy. Let's call him...
Is it a man named Jed? You said it was a boy, sorry.
Let's call him Mr. Migney. No, wait, that's not too obvious. Let's call him Bark. So Bark should know better, but Bark has a weakness for skirmish games. Bark also always is willing to try a new skirmish game. Bark wants to play the skirmish games he has more, and he always wants to play more new ones. But Bark has a problem, and that is that, number one, there's not enough hours in the day, and number two, a lot of skirmish games are, how shall we say this, bad. And many of them are bad in the same predictable ways. And consequently, Bark has spent a lot of time playing mediocre skirmish games and feeling relatively foolish for acquiring them because a lot of skirmish games are fabulously expensive. Now, The Edge is no exception. It had been on my trade list. Sorry, I'm not talking about me. This other guy's. It had been on some other guy's trade list for quite some time, but it is, it was a Kickstarter that was released in a variety of different formats. Like, you get a starter box of two random factions, and it would be the cost of a full-price game. Or you could get the war chest with all six factions, and it would be gloriously expensive. And by gloriously, I mean hideously. Not necessarily overpriced. There's a lot of stuff in there, but, you know, still very, very expensive. And that's the kind of commitment that's hard to do, given that, A, a lot of skirmish games are real bad, and B, Awakened Realms has not really made anything that we've enjoyed other than Lords of Hellas, and they've made a lot of stuff that we've strongly disliked. And I stumbled into an advantageous trade and was able to... Okay, I'm going to... Revelation time now. I was actually talking about me the entire time.
No way.
I know.
You,
I'm sorry.
You?
I'm sorry I had to submit all of you to a ruse.
Wow.
Yes, I am nothing but a heartless mountebank. And I was, I didn't really have very, very high hopes. But as you say, it's extraordinarily well done in a lot of ways. I was getting a lot of Warhammer Underworlds vibes. Not necessarily in terms of specifics, but in terms of we don't want wasted turns. We're not going to belabor the point in terms of spending a lot of time closing the distance, right? Because that is one aspect of For What Remains. For What Remains is fabulous. It's one of my favorite skirmish games in a box. But you deploy at opposite ends of the map, and your first couple of turns are very much a question. Now, the activation system makes up for it. In For What Remains, the chitpole activation system means that closing is still a subject of some tension and decision-making. But in the context of skirmish games, if you can do it the way Warhammer Underworlds does it, if you can do it the way The Edge Dawnfall does it, where everybody just starts in the middle of everything, and nonetheless positioning really matters, then that's what you want. And consequently, there was no downturn. The the decision about when to pass was hugely consequential, because most everything you want to do in Dawnfall is going to cost you crystals. Attacking well, defending well, playing most cards, they all cost crystals, and you only get your crystals back by effectively passing your turn. And on top of that, some factions do terrible things to you when they pass. Walker's faction was putting out these hedgerows and these brambles everywhere, and whenever he would pass, anything next to it would suffer a wound. And so I would be in these positions where I'd have these fighters next to the hedges, like, oh crap, when's he going to pass? Well, like, I can't pass. I need to get this guy out of dodge. Oh no. And I had a thoroughly good time. It wasn't too long. It wasn't too cumbersome in terms of components. Yeah, there are a lot of factions, but they all come in these little trays. And so it's like, okay, here's your faction.
Victory conditions, straightforward.
Yeah, points for kills. It's done. I'm not 100% sure I'm okay with how that shakes out in practice. I usually like a little bit more sophistication or interest in terms of the victory conditions. Here, in the Edge Dawnfall, the pressure to do things like maneuver, the pressure to do things like outflank or engage in weird combos is by virtue of either its economic model or just exogenously generated by virtue of the special abilities. So I'm a little bit wait and see as far as the whole victory conditions go, especially as it relates to healing. It's kind of weird. You're kind of encouraged to gang up on a single figure or a single squad until they're completely eliminated. I'm not sure exactly how much I like that. Time will tell. But in The other thing that you highlighted that I think is very, very excellent in the Edge Dawnfall is the balance between customizability and approachability, because you can pick any squads you want, but there are recommended ones. You can build your deck more or less however you want, but there are recommended ones. And so you really get a good balance about being able to play with a lot of toys, but it's not daunting for a newcomer. And that's a hard path to tread. And I think that Dawnfall did a really good job of it.
Now, it's not all sunshine and buttercups. The combat is quick and easy.
Yes.
But it does use these D6s that are awfully swingy sometimes.
Yes. It's just a function of when a fight happens, both sides roll either a D6 minus 2 for free. So 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Or you can pay an energy before your roll to upgrade it to a normal D6. And yeah, there's a fair amount of variance that's going on there. You can attack with considerable advantage or defend with considerable disadvantage, and you're going to get a couple of aberrant results. And normally in a game of this sort, you want there to be a little bit more texture to the dice system and or custom dice that flatten the probability curve and or in a volume of dice that it all kinds of shakes out. So, for example, you know, talking back to For What Remains. And For What Remains, every attack you're going to be throwing a bunch of dice. And so it kind of evens out there. And also, the consequences of any single attack in For What Remains are relatively minimal because of the way the damage system works and the way other things. In the context of the Edge Dawnfall, you could have a massive attack that could swing a couple of points, and a couple of points matter a lot in the Edge Dawnfall, matter entirely on just an unmodified and unmodifiable toss of a D6. And that's not great. That's not ideal. And yeah, a slightly more sophistication there might have been good, but then again, you might not have been able to do that and keep it that quick and visceral. Yeah, it's tough. So particularly the victory conditions as they dovetail with that dice system is where I'm a little bit less enthusiastic. I'm cautious about it, but I definitely want to see the other factions at play. I want to play with other setups. There are solo rules that don't look like I'm going to enjoy, but I'm sufficiently enthusiastic about the game and curious that I'm probably going to give it a shot. And there's tons of other stuff to be seen. So I came in with very low expectations and was very pleasantly surprised.
That is The Edge Dawnfall.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the name either.
It's great. And those are the games we played this week. And now we're going to pay some bills.
It's great that ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, but you can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. It's so simple, even a gibbon could do it. ExpressVPN lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from over 100 different countries. I've been using ExpressVPN to check out Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance on South Korean Netflix, Friends and the American version of The Office on UK Netflix, Back to Canada for Sound of Metal, and luxuriating in the one and only Tim Riggins with US Netflix and Friday Night Lights. But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reason I love ExpressVPN is because it is so fast and unobtrusive. It also works on all your devices. Phones, media consoles, smart TVs, and more. So if you want to get access to hundreds of new shows, use my link right now, expressvpn.com/sowronggames, and you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/sowronggames.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
And we're back with the news and why it doesn't matter. And you know why it doesn't matter? Do you know what DLP Games can do with their 10th anniversary Orleans?
I can shove it. Oh, whoa, whoa. Family show, Walker.
You know what they then, Mark?
I saw what happened. You go on,
it,
Walker.
You buy it and you get everything.
Who's this you?
Not me. So everyone that already has everything or almost everything, well, guess what? Screw you.
This is like Agricola 15 all over again, isn't it?
Oh, it was great. No, Agricola 15 was great for
me.
Yeah,
because you didn't have any Agricola.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the new edition, the 10th anniversary edition of Orléans is going to come with absolutely everything, right?
It will.
Yeah.
And upgraded stuff.
Upgraded stuff?
Yep.
Oh, so are the workers going to be cardboard discs, wooden discs, or are they going to be
They're all going to be wooden.
They're all going to be wooden discs?
They're a little bit not very clear about if this plague expansion that you do get with it. They didn't really specify whether they're going to have, I'm sure it's going to come with the plague, the proper plague meeples in order to play it. Doesn't say it does, but I'm sure it will.
You're just bitter that these other people are getting a good entry point and you don't.
That's a really big entry point. I have sent, and also I have urged others. I'm part of this big board game geek sort of area. Where we are talking about said geek bits and the fact that there are no plagues. And so I said, well, here's the link to contact.
Oh, I forgot. This is a Board Game Geek bit thing. This is not purely DLP's fault.
That's right. I see. I've put the link in the forum for people. Here's the link that you can contact the geek bits people and ask for the plague markers.
I see.
So I'm hoping more people will click on that link and ask. They've already got back to me because I have asked, and they said on their next sort of meeting on what bits we're going to do next, they will see if there's enough asking for that particular bit to give us some stuff.
Okay.
And we'll see. And if it doesn't, like in the next bit, if we don't hear anything, then like I said, I'm just going to do, like I said, I'll buy like the Altiplano bits or some other, you know, discs from another game that are the same size. And then those will be the plague discs.
Just cover them in with a Sharpie or something.
Don't even need to, because they'll be so different from the Orléans ones. They don't need to be.
Well, I know, but thematically speaking, here's a monk, here's a knight, here's a llama. Okay.
True. I could maybe get
the llama is a dead European dude.
I'll see if I can get some skull stickers.
Sure.
And then I'll spray paint them all black and then remove the stickers and they'll all be like little skull tokens or something. Maybe I'll do something.
Now you're thinking.
And that is the 10th anniversary edition of Rainer Stockhausen's Orléans. Check it out, as the bits are very, very interesting. I really like what they did with the goods, because you've seen my goods.
Yes.
They're all sort of the shapes of the goods, as opposed to tokens that you can't see, you put out randomly. So it's a little more difficult to put them out. So what they did, they just turned the same tokens that you get in the base game, but they're all wooden bits. So it's like wooden crates on one side, and then you flip them over, and they're...
I see.
Yeah, so they're... They're different. I think I prefer what they have over to what I have, but, you know, there you go.
I don't know. Sounds like a reason to spend $100 on a new edition to me.
Stop it.
I only have one bit of news, and it's not even board game related, but the greatest game of all time in the digital sphere is Star Control 2, published in 1992. Those who know. Those who've walked the path of now and forever, or who would adhere to the eternal doctrine, are well aware. And at long last, after 30 years, we are getting a sequel. It is called Free Stars, Children of Infinity. It is up on crowdfunding now. I just want to say this, look, because sometimes something happens and you assume the other person's heard of something and so you remain silent. And then you learn later on that they could have really profited from that bit of information. And you burn with a sense of regret and unfulfilled potential. And I just want anybody who has fond memories of Star Control 2 who didn't already know that there's a sequel called Free Stars, Children of Infinity being crowdfunded right now. I just could not rest knowing that I could let some of these people slip through the cracks. It's so true. I just want them taken care of.
And there's cooperative mode that's been hinted around, so I'm looking forward to that.
It's not just Melee Walker. It's Super Melee.
It's true.
Free Stars, Children of Infinity. The creators are back. Fred Ford and Paul Reiche. They're back. Walker, they're back.
They're back.
So that is the news and why it doesn't matter. On to our feature game. Our feature game this week is An Age Contrived, designed by Chris Matthew and published by Bellows Intent this year after successful crowdfunding. Chris Matthew is a game designer who designed An Age Contrived, who is known for his design work on An Age Contrived. And Bellows Intent is the publisher who published An Age Contrived, known for their work publishing An Age Contrived. Walker, why don't you give us an unhelpful summary about what one does in An Age Contrived?
I wish I knew, Mark. I'm sure the rule...
I'm sure you should have played the game.
The rule book, I'm sure, will tell you something like God's doing something, something. Do I feel like I'm doing any of this while I'm playing the game? Nope. What you're doing in an age contrived, Mark, is that you're managing stuff. You're managing this handful of energy tokens that have, you know, five different styles that are put on them. You're managing your action tiles that slide through this player box that you have. You want to make sure they're populated the right way. You want to make sure you're using the right tiles because you want to have the right tiles available when you need them. You're also moving a pawn, or you might not move the pawn around the map. That's up to you.
It's your avatar, Walker. You're moving the avatar of your god.
You're moving an avatar around the map, and you're improving your board. You're doing all sorts of things, but it has no theme to it, nor... Well, we'll get into the other stuff.
Yeah, we will.
Done.
So this is a different story. I've told you the story about Bark McNee, purveyor of mediocre skirmish games.
What did he think of this, Mark?
So I'm going to blame the acquisition of this game on Bark McNee. Every once in a while, there's that crowdfunding project that has one or two things, and you look at it and say, oh, that looks cute. And you figure, whatever. I'm a professional board game podcaster. I shouldn't just limit myself to the things that I have good reason to believe that I will enjoy. I can take a hit for the hobby.
It's true. We covered this game in our Pledge of Indifference.
We did.
And we talked about how cool the player boards looked and the fact that they're these giant pieces of metal and the tiles, the action tiles slide down them with the little energy tiles intact. And then when you want to use something, you pull this lever and they
spring loaded
and they drop down the little trap door and then you release it and they shoot out the front and hooray. So much weight and money for what?
Yeah, okay.
Does it improve gameplay whatsoever? No. Does it add to the gameplay whatsoever? No.
Sure. Okay, look. On that metric, on those two questions alone, I don't think that's quite enough to be dismissive of the player boards, because we are very weak to the toy factor in lots of other games, be they Euros, be they non-Euros, whatever. If you can have a good toy factor, whatever. Like just random example, right? The way the cube works on the wheel of Praga Kapit Regni, right? The way that it falls into a little slot that, yes, it's functional. It helps you understand how the rounds are managed, but it's also really cool, all right?
Yeah, and it also stops you. Like, it reminds you that the round...
Yes, it is functional, but it is also cool. And when that happened, I am, you know, Praga Kapit Regni is very themeless. It's very mechanical. It's got a lot of stuff going on. They're not similar kinds of games. But when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cute. You know, little bits of flourishes like that. And indeed, the complicated metal action... We're spending far more time than it deserves on these player boards.
Because it takes up most of the box. It makes it weigh a ton.
All right, fair enough. All right. My problem is that they're not really functional. The way the player board works, you're kind of sort of programming in An Age Contrived. You have this river of action tiles, five of them, and you seed them with energy tokens, which are these lovely Bakelite slabs. And when it is the case that they've advanced to the part where you want them to be, over sometimes meticulous, sometimes instantaneous preparation. You remove tokens from the bottom half of a tile in order to do actions, and you remove tokens from the top half of the tile to seed them on the board. It's called deploy. It's pretty much the biggest action you're going to be doing, deploy. Everything else is kind of fiddling around the edges. And when you remove the action tiles from the bottom, you literally just remove the action tiles from the bottom. When you deploy, what you're supposed to do, as Walker said, is you pull down the spring-loaded plunger, they fall down, and then you release the plunger, and that's supposed to cause them to shoot at the top. Here's the problem. You're either going to be doing this on a table that is slick or it is not slick. And by slick, I just mean, you know, wood, formica, whatever it happens to be. I've tried it on a slick table. On a slick table, what you need to do is construct the cardboard baffles that the game comes with in its defense that will then prevent these energy tokens from going wildly all over the place. If you're playing on a table, as we often do, that has some kind of felt or velveteen or something topping, it is going to be a bit of a challenge. Like, it was almost a dexterity game in itself. Not a good one, a bad one. First, you need to pull the plunger so that the energy tokens actually fall and don't get stuck. They get stuck a non-trivial amount of time. Then you need to release the plunger such that, number one, it is hard enough that the tiles go out an appropriate distance. Number two, not so hard that it causes the rest of the tiles in your board to jostle out of their little depressions. So after practicing, I practiced with these things. I'm serious. I'm not joking. I spent 2 hours building these things, all right? Maybe that is partially informing why I'm so upset about the fact that even after practice, I could not get these things to work reliably. I know it's contrived.
It's contrived.
Okay, while I'm airing grievances, are we done with the player boards for now?
Yes.
Can I complain about the title of this game?
Yes.
the title... Okay, the theme of the game, it's a themeless game. The theme of the game is that you're gods in a polytheistic environment competing for who is going to be the new deity in a new monotheistic age. An age contrived. I mean, what the hell is up with this stupid title? A contrived age? No, that doesn't sound... We need to put a little bit of English on that one. Zhuzh it up and it's like, what about an age contrived? Like, ooh!
It's rough.
Do you know who's the person who's allowed to get away with this? Jenna Kincaid. Jenna Kincaid, in the game Dwyer the Lesser Houses, instead of saying, like, a mercantile house, they're all like, a house mercantile. These people aren't Jenna Kincaid.
It's true.
I'm going to give a pass to Jenna Kincaid because Jenna Kincaid gave us Cosmic Frog. Until you've designed Cosmic Frog, you don't get to pull wordplay like that in board games. It's a rule. It is a rule enacted.
All right, Age of Contrived, you're doing actions, and you get to do as many actions as you want.
Do you know why I'm talking about all this?
Why are you talking about all this, Mark?
It is so hard to repeat in new words. We're going to go into more detail. But do you know, the upshot is really, really, really simple. Functional, but not fun.
Functional and not fun, yes.
And I'm not talking about the boards. The boards are not functional and not fun. And Age of Contrived, functional, not fun.
Agreed.
We'll go into more detail, but that's the top line response. Huey put it best. It's like, I struggle to put into words. And you and I were like, yeah, that's our job.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt. I have feelings, Walker.
It's hard to, like, sell a game to people. Like, do you want to play a game called An Age Contrived? And that doesn't sound good.
Well, at least here there's no false advertising.
When it's your turn, you can do as many actions as you want that you can actually pay for. Like Mark said, you have a row of these action tiles, and you get to remove the bottom tiles, and you can do as many as you like. Or you can sort of keep them there so they can slide down, and that's the other thing you get to do. You load in these new action sort of templates, and you get to buy new ones too that will sort of give you more blocks and also have some symbols on them, and they slide them down so you can do more and different actions. Which is interesting sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fundamental conceit of the action programming and planning is, it has potential, right? But the upshot is that I think the overall theme for me about why an Age Contrived doesn't work is one of disconnections. Because I just want to I want to stress before getting any further, it's pretty clear that I hostility is too strong. My actual overall attitude towards an Age Contrived is one of kind of wearied indifference. Much ado about nothing. But, I just want to be perfectly clear, not because I'm worried about hurting their feelings, because they don't know who the hell we are and they're not going to care. But this is not a case, I think, of designers or publishers being lazy. I'm usually the first to say, oh, you know, this is a lazy worker placement or lazy Tableau building, whatever. There's effort in a lot of what goes on in an Age Contrived. And it's clear from the really well done player aids, although the information organization isn't ideal. It's clear also from the fact that to them, what's going on is very meaningful. There are two different ways to construct all the player boards just for different graphical flourishes. They made two versions of practically everything just so you could customize it however you wanted visually. That's impressive. And sadly, as a player, as an end user, very little of this gets to me when I'm actually playing the game. So I just feel this tremendous gulf between what seems to be evident passion and effort on the one hand, and then the actual play experience, which is one just devoid of, it's just flat. Flat and devoid of interest and engagement. And that, in a real way, is what motivates a lot of my frustration with an Age Contrived. If this were just lazy, it would be one thing.
Yeah, but, and there's a little bit of disappointment mixed in there, too, because, like we said, the boards are interesting because they're these metal things that flick out the tiles, and then you're also constructing these like magnetically infused pieces of cardboard that construct these, you know, fairly large monuments. Now, that's a double-edged sword.
Yes.
Because like we've seen, they block lots of parts of the board that sometimes you need to see, like what is going on.
It's miraculous. It's almost as though they were carefully calibrated to be sufficiently large to obscure various aspects of the board state. A sense that there's genuine confusion, like, wait, am I at this monument? They have to look around. But such that when you're just sitting and looking at the overall table presence, the board still doesn't have much table presence, even with the monuments built. It's quite surprising. I don't know how it worked, because, yeah, magnets are great. I want all games to have magnets if they possibly could. Actually, building the monuments is kind of fun. They're these metal skeletons that you set out at the start of the game, and every time a level of a monument is completed, that's nominally what you'd be doing most of the time in Age Contrived, building monuments, you snap on the level of the monument because the cardboard's got a magnet inside, and that's really cool. And then, after you're done playing with the magnet, you're like, this is just blocking my view and kind of boring.
Yeah, the whole board is kind of boring because there was a game where you didn't move your avatar at all.
Not one step.
And even when you do move your avatar, it's not enjoyable or fun or interesting. And that's the whole board, right?
So yeah.
The monuments and this movement that sure gets you bonus actions and bonus things, but
if I were a game developer, I'm not, but if I were a game developer, the first thing I would do after playing an Age Contrived is get rid of the board. You don't need it. It's not doing much work. It is contributing, and again, this is another thing that sort of the theme of disconnect. There's the disconnect between the effort and the passion of the creators on the one hand and the overall disinterest I have as a user at the other end. There's a disconnect between the theme and the gameplay, and there's a disconnect between these different disparate elements of playing an Age Contrived. They wanted there to be a sense of focus, again, thematically and mechanically on building these monuments, and indeed, that's where much of the game is. And the board is physically much of its presence, but really just, it feels like a tacked on weird ancillary afterthought, such that it actually leads to confusion. Let me give you an example. So much of the game is about deploying and binding energy, either to monuments or other areas. The overwhelming majority of the time, where your avatar is 100% irrelevant to where you can deploy energy. I've seen rules questions in person and online all the time of people assuming that when you're deploying energy, it has something to do with where your avatar is. It doesn't. It's wherever you want it to be on the board. And so ultimately what you have is this large board where really you just care about these small spaces on the actual monument pieces. The time when it matters is because of this other mechanism, which is utterly unconnected with what you're doing most of the time, about having presence in various areas of the board. It's really limiting at the beginning of the game, but near the end of the game, it's practically trivial. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, and that, like you said, putting the tiles on the monuments to build them leads to this odd sniping thing.
Yep.
And in the end, it just makes it more difficult because you're trying to sometimes finish a monument, and I guess in the long run, maybe it works out that everyone gets an equal chance at building monuments, but sometimes it doesn't work out that way because as the game advances, people are completing these in one go.
Yes.
Right? So if you don't get in on the sniping early, then you're not going to get into it later because,
when a monument level is completed, everyone who contributed all gets a choice of two different bonuses, and the person who contributed the final piece gets an additional bonus which will actually score them points directly. And it can be a fair quantity of the points, although overall one does get a pretty strong point salady feel from a lot of what's going on in an Age Contrived. And they decided to make the choice that if you contributed two pieces or three pieces, it makes no difference. One or more pieces is the number of pieces. So usually it is only in your interest to contribute one or finish the thing. Not really a whole lot of incentive to contribute two or more. And the attempt, I think, was to minimize this aspect of sniping and make sure that more people could get in on things. But often it leads to weird tempo considerations and bizarre elements of it. It's like, well, if I contribute to this, I know the next person downstream is just going to finish it. So is it in my interest? And the answer is yes. I mean, it's
early game, for sure.
Early game, definitely. Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Late game things might change. But honestly, there's not a whole lot of direct player competition in an Age Contrived. There's a little bit of player interaction, but not really a whole lot of area majority or area control going on, which other games working on a similar kind of rhythm of like we're all contributing towards building levels of something would care more about. And ultimately, I think it was a question of pick your poison. I don't really begrudge the decision that they made. I think it mostly just encourages people on occasion to think suboptimally if they've not quite internalized the relatively straightforward scoring conditions.
Yeah, and the scoring conditions change up a little bit, but the way you put out tokens there, which all have to be different from those different Bakelite tiles I was talking about, you have to make sure you put different ones out there. And it's just having certain number of tokens on your player board or having certain things met. And then you have to be able to actually deploy a token, and then you're allowed to put it over there. So sometimes that can lead to like odd timing issues, especially near the end of the game. But in all, I just didn't feel there was anything going on in Age Contrived that was fun to do.
Yeah. At the end of it, I feel part of this, actually, just to dovetail back to this issue of achievements and scoring conditions, every game of an Age Contrived I played felt more or less the same. You know, there are asymmetric player powers, but more or less, based on the scoring conditions, you're going to end up a little bit of everywhere. You want to bind energy to monuments. You can't really afford to ignore that. You want to get all of your energy out of the supply. And you do that not because of throughput considerations, but because it's a huge whack of points. And then you want to put out as many tiles as you can on the board, satisfy as many achievements as you can. And most of the time, the variation is just, do I score 2 points per compass tile that I have on the board? Or do I score 2 points per rose tile that I have on the board? Who cares? And I ultimately felt that I'm just shuffling these tiles around to no thematic or gameplay satisfaction element. And that further feeds into my general sense of disinterest. It's a relatively long game. 90 to 120 minutes has been our experience, even when sometimes people start abusing the ability to start finishing monuments prematurely, which is a very, very divisive mechanism. I think it works fine. Yeah. The moment you've contributed your second bit to any given monument, you have the ability every time you plan to prematurely complete a level of monument. And that just accelerates the game. And I'm glad it's there. Without that, the game would take so much longer and exacerbate these completion consideration issues. But alas, I don't think it's time well spent. I think that with some development, maybe you could have had a tighter 45-minute boardless experience. Even then, I don't think it would have been compelling, but then it would just been, you know, another forgettable light Euro game. Not a large, heavy table monster thing with these metal contraptions that don't really work and all this artwork in service of nothing. And
a lot of the faction abilities, not almost all of the faction abilities reveal themselves throughout the game. So trying to figure out what the other players are doing, good luck, because they don't do anything different from you until they start revealing all these different things. And suddenly they're doing, you know, 30 different combos and you're like, okay, well, how did you do that?
Thank you for reminding me, Walker, of the downtime. The downtime is considerable because whenever a monument is completed, everyone has to figure out what they're doing with all of their tiles. And so that's a whole bunch of people trying to figure out what to do. A minor benefit here. Oh, this is a compass tile. When I complete a monument using a compass tile, I get to move the compass tile somewhere else. Where can I move this compass? Oh, nowhere. Oh, okay. Or just there. I don't know. So, yeah. The downtime was much longer than it needed to be.
Agreed. I'm glad we are done playing in Age Contrived.
Yep.
I don't think I want to play it again.
Yes. Here's where I'm at in terms of my overall evaluation. And again, I it's a shame. I feel so much wasted potential here because some of the components are potentially cool. Some of the components are actually cool in brief bits. And a lot of talent and effort went into an age contrived. I don't know about game design chops. We don't really have much evidence for what else the game designer is capable of, but we'll see. If somebody suggested a game of an age contrived, I would say no. If somebody said, I really want to play an age contrived, I'd get up from the table and say, you do you, I'll be somewhere else. If I showed up at someone's house and an age contrived was already set up, I don't know if I would leave. That's where I'm at. I don't feel good saying this. I sincerely don't. A lot of effort went into this. And people should be using magnets. And people should be finding out how to spring-load things. This is a thing I want to encourage.
This is a good first attempt.
But by the same token, I'm of two minds, right? Because on the one hand, I want to encourage magnets and spring-loaded. But on the other hand, when you get these large, heavy boxes in service of an unfocused, unthematic kind of point salad-y thing without much to engage you in terms of gameplay, it just emphasizes the extent to which our hobby is a consumer-driven one leading to an environmental apocalypse and economic devastation. And now, Walker, I'm sad. An age contrived has made me sad.
A single tear has just fallen.
I'm serious. I am kind of sad.
It is. There was potential there.
Yeah. And that's going to do it for this week. I'm going to go figure out how to eat my feelings. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can find all of our necessary information at sowronggames.com. We are still taking questions for our upcoming Omnibus episode. No topic is off the table. We will not necessarily answer everything, but it's Omnibus questions for a reason. It doesn't have to be about board games. And we would love to hear from you. We will read everything you send us. We will get back to you if we can. Thanks again for tuning in. We appreciate your having decided to spend some time with us, and we hope to see you again soon.
Peace!
You've been listening to So Very Wrong About Games, produced by Michael Walker and edited by Mark Biggin. Special thanks goes to What Does It Eat for generously allowing us to use their most excellent song, FOS, as our theme. You can find them at whatdoeseteat.com. You can reach us by email at soveryrongaboutgames@gmail.com or on Twitter at sowronggames. Thanks very much, see you next time, and always, try to be right, but remember you are so very wrong.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.